Vegas Bad Boys Podcast presents Matt Michaels, People I Don't Hate.
Hey everybody, this is J-A-Y, J-Cafe, Jacob Austin Young. You are listening to the Vegas Bad Boys Podcast.
Hey everybody, Matt Michaels here, and I got DJ Impact with me along with Simon Street. And today we welcome someone who basically has been all around the world. You know her from Ring of Honor. Wow.
NWA, Lucha Underground, AEW.
but really right now, the biggest thing is that NWA Women's Champion belt that you have. It's Thunder Rosa. Thank you for joining us, Thunder Rosa. And just getting to that, what did it mean to you to be the first female Mexican wrestler to hold that title?
Well, it means a lot. Just being part of like history, being part of like written, your name will be written forever in the history books. It's pretty cool, you know, because you're leaving a legacy and your name's going to be there forever.
You know, when you first got interested in wrestling, did you ever think that you would come this far and that you could actually say something like legacy and put your name attached to it?
Yeah. I mean, the reason why I got into wrestling is one, because I was going to make money, and two, because I was going to do more than anybody else had done. Like, that was my goal. Like, I don't do things just to do them. Like, if I'm going to do it, it's because either it's going to be beneficial for my family, it's going to be beneficial for me financially, or it's because it's going to take me to another level, or it's going to help me to get the next level that I need to get. And that was, for me, that was wrestling.
And, you know, when you first started out, who were the inspirations for you?
I didn't really have, like, I wasn't like, oh my God, when I saw her, I knew I wanted to be a wrestler. I didn't know anything. Like, I met a lot of, like, old-timers, and I honestly didn't know, find girl, nothing. My friends were like, you're so stupid, you don't even know who they are. And I was like, no, bro, I don't. Like, I don't watch wrestling. I never did. And so I had research. And then later on, that's when I started learning more about them, that I was like, oh, okay, cool. This lady is this lady that. The only one that I met in person, I was like super excited, was Mickie James, because I knew Mickie James when I met Lisa Marie. Yeah. She used to come to our shows and she used to wear our shirts. I thought that was cool of her to do that. And I used to watch her when I was watching DNA. Who else? When I met ODB, I totally fangirl, like super hard, because she was one of my favorites.
Isn't she? She's one of the sweetest people too. Jess is just like, you know, you would expect that, like seeing ODB, you know, and just how physically intimidating she is, and she's just like the sweetest person.
No, she is, and she was super easy to work with, and super willing to, you know, have a fun match, and I like meeting people like that, definitely. So but yeah, those are the women that when I met them, I was like very excited.
You know, when you think about your childhood growing up, what's something that sticks out as being your motivation to be successful in life? Because I think we all kind of
want to be poor, man.
Yes, that part.
I remember being in first or second grade, and I had one pair of shoes that my godmother gave me. It was the Beauty and the Beast pair of shoes, and that was the only pair of shoes I had for like 2 years, and they were ripped for a long time. And I remember it was raining, like water would come in my shoes. I wanted to wear like really nice clothes, but that was like the only pair of shoes that I had. So I had to wear like my dresses with those tennis shoes that were all ripped. And that just like was staying in my brain. So when I first got my first job when I was 14, when I got my first check, first thing I did was to buy myself shoes. And then I became addicted to having shoes. My husband, my son always tells me that I'm too much, because I have probably like 40 or 50 pairs of shoes now.
Oh man.
But that tells you, like, I never go again, unless that's the look, I want to do like a hipster look and then my shoes are going to be ripped. Like, I never want to feel that feeling that I don't have what I need ever again.
You know, Rosa, it's interesting that you kind of tell that backstory. You know, one of the one things that I enjoy when I see you in the ring is two things that stuck out to me. Number one is your presence. Your presence, when I see it, is I'm here. You get what you get. I hope you're prepared because I'm ready to bring that ass whooping in the ring, which I love that. Number two, the one good thing that I like about you, too, is your style. It's like a ground and pound, but it's also like also, you know, luchador based. But I like how you're able to be very versatile. You switch it up. And I've noticed from different matches to matches, like you don't do the same cut and dry cookie cutter. I noticed you add different variations and whatnot. Is some of that like a style that you incorporate because of you said you grew up, you know, and you knew what it was like to struggle. You knew what it was like to have to be versatile. And for people that out there that know what it's like to have to grind, find opportunities, take opportunities when they come. Did some of that translate into how you do your ring?
No, I just don't like boring matches, man. I remember seeing some other peers that I have, and I'm watching. I was like, this match looks the same, but with another girl. Mm-hmm. This the same, man. I was like 5 minutes in, I was just like, let me find another one. Let me find another one. Let me find another one. I mean, I hated watching it. And I was like, and I remember telling my husband, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to do that. Like, I want my style to be different. I want to showcase things that I have learned in different parts of the world. And because I want to look and be different, you know, that's mm-hmm. my look, that's my gear, my face, my headpieces, the way that I walk and everything else. And yes, I try my best on every match to accommodate to my opponent, but I also like to do different things during my matches. I mean, I have my signature stuff, but I like to mm-hmm. do different.
Well, and like I said, that's the cool thing that I like about your style, because I notice you'll face certain it's all good. You'll face certain opponents, and I notice like your style kind of seems like you kind of feed off of what they're doing, and I thought that was really cool. In some matches, I was like, wow. I mean, like you said, you don't want no boring ass matches. So thank you for that, because I think we all as wrestling fans, we get tired of the same boring matches. What would you say from your personal life that you're able to take into the persona that is Thunder Rosa?
It's all me. They're right there. Times 10. I mean, I'm still respectful when things don't go right. You know, I'm fighting until the end when I know, you know, the result. I give my all and just, you know, continue to show that when I'm there, you're going to remember me. You either remember my face because of the face paint, or you remember because I whipped somebody's ass. So that's my thing. And it's the same with life. Like when I was a social worker, when I was a student, I always wanted to excel. I want to be number one on everything. I want to be involved in everything. I wanted to excel, always excel, because that's the only way I was going to get to the next level or to my goal or to reach my goal, to reach my dreams. And there's the same thing on the square circle.
You know, and speaking of one of the, I think the most like respectable things that you've done is you've been able to graduate from UC Berkeley in sociology. How did you get interested in sociology? And was it, you know, the idea of being able to eventually help kids? Or what was your plans going into school, and how hard was it to get through school?
Well, my goal was to transfer to university. I always wanted to go and get my university studies, always. When I was in Mexico, I dreamed that I was going to be a teacher, but I always had that mentality that I was going to come to the United States and study in the United States. Once I was given the opportunity, once I graduated, I only did one my senior year in the United States. So I didn't have a chance to, like, apply to school or anything. So I had to do community college. So my whole community college was, I had to learn English. I had to learn, you know, what else I had to learn? Everything about the culture, about the system, about everything. And I got really involved in student politics. And I was more interested in politics than I was interested in sociology. But the problem was when I applied to all the schools, the only ones that allowed me to go in political science was UCLA, and I think it was UC San Diego. But UC Berkeley was an impacted major. So I had to select sociology. So I went for sociology. But at the time, like I was telling you, those three, I think it was the two last years of my community college, I became really involved in student politics, and that made me even want to help more people. We were doing a lot of stuff with students of color, first-generation students, you know, organizing events to educate them,
yeah,
to act, to educational stuff. And that helped me to learn a lot about opportunities that I could have as a first-generation student. And when I applied to all the schools that I wanted, I got in all the schools, San Diego, Irvine, L.A., Berkeley, and Riverside. And at that time, that's when I started dating my husband. Back then, he was my boyfriend, and we were living together. So we chose, we were in between UCLA. He didn't like Los Angeles, so we didn't, I was like, nah, you're not going to L.A. Mm-hmm. And then went to UC Berkeley, and we fell in love with the city. We fell in love with Oakland, the Bay Area, how beautiful it was. And like literally, we packed this 1987 Aerostar van that overheated every hour.
Wow. So
50 hours to get to Oakland with everything we had. And like, maybe we had like $1,000 in our bank account. We had, wow, we left, we didn't have nothing. We didn't have no family, nothing. We just left everything because, you know, my dream was to finish school. My husband went with me with no job, nothing, nothing. We just left.
You know, being first generation, obviously you have a concept of America when you're growing up. When you got here, what was the most startling difference than what you imagined?
It's so funny because when I was in high school, I did not understand why Mexicans didn't like me.
Wow. Please do tell.
I just didn't know. Like, on my first week, like, three girls tried to fight me because they said I was a stuck-up bitch. But the reason why I was a stuck-up bitch is because I was trying to learn English, and I wasn't trying to hang out with all the people that I could hang out on TJ, because I was living in TJ too, you know? So it's like,
yeah.
I didn't get it. I didn't get it. And then that was like the thing, the most startling thing is like, how can we be so divisive when we come from the same place and we're all trying to go to the same place? Like, why are you treating your people that way? It should be the opposite, right? So mm-hmm. For me, that's what it drove me so much to study history, to study Chicano history, and study the importance of unity and helping those who want to get to the next level that are from your same race or your same background without you judging them because they don't speak English. I mean, they don't speak English, or they don't speak Spanish, or they're not Mexican enough, or they're not Latino enough. It's like we're all going through the same issues. And that moving to the Bay Area, that really helped me to open my eyes to other races that were going through the same thing. And it made me more open and more welcoming to everybody than anything else.
You know, when you think about influencing and just having a culture and family and being open to, you know, different races and everything, you know, a lot of that is a great message towards the future. And one of the, you know, I would say probably one of the biggest things you're proud of is your niece. You know, when you see these little girls who are being influenced, and I don't want to bring your personal, like your own children into it, but more so that, because, you know, our own moms, we look at our own moms, we have opinions on our own moms. But, you know, when you're looking at your aunt, or you're looking at it from a kid's point of view, you're looking at, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, for instance, just died. Positive female role models. How much of it do you see when at a show you have these little girls who come up? Are they shy? Are they beaming? What does that make you feel like?
Some of them are really shy, and their parents usually tell me that they're going to come to the show, and then I talk to the girls. I have a couple deep conversations with them, especially if they're really shy. I always like encourage them to be strong, to be not at super outspoken, but at least to speak up for themselves, yeah, and things that they love, you know. then I have some others that are just out there and they just want to hold it and they want to like pose and stuff. There's like all kinds of them, but I the ones that I have gotten the closest is a one. Her name is Chloe. She's from the Bay Area. I've known her. She was 8. Now she's 13. I've seen her grow and grow into her own persona, and she still wants to be a wrestler. And I always talk to her about like how important it is to be for her. She needs to be very strong minded and with really thick skin if she wants to be in this business or in any business if she wants to be in power. Then my goddaughter, she is she's a little angel. She's so smart. She is Samoan. She's the daughter of one of the girls that I used to work for when I was a social worker. She was one of my I used to do a lot of case work with her, and we became really good friends, and I became the godmother of her daughter. And I seen how she's growing on her own and how she's becoming a mother. And like now her daughter is not like she was when she grew up, which is beautiful to see. And there's this other one. I have two here in Texas. Ceci, she lives in Laredo. The shyest kid ever. And one time her dad actually sent me a video. She dressed like me and she was walking like me with confidence. And I was like, wow, like just putting the face on completely changed her. And then you see her, she's like, hi, you know, like that was the cutest thing. I still have the video. There's an other girl from Dallas. I thought that was the nicest thing that they could have ever done. They paid so much money just to come to a meet and greet. And we had a show in the at night, but they were kind of scared for the COVID. And I was like, no, you guys come back for the show. And I remember she was like on second row and she was just waiting for me to wave at her and smile at her. And when I did it, she had like the biggest smile in the world. And she came and she told me, I've been working on my self-esteem. I'm feeling a little bit better when I talk to other people. Thank you. You're always encouraging me. So stuff like that is like, you never know like the impact that you're going to have in some of these girls' lives. And even some of the older women too. I have a lot of lately, I've been having a lot of messages on my DM saying that my work ethic and my, you know, I'm always working out, that really empower them to take a step and start losing weight or to do something that they love or they were afraid of doing. And that to me means a lot. I mean, there's been a couple occasions when they send me letters and I'm on tears reading the letters because they're like, so beautiful because people are like throwing their lives and trusting in you and reading this and not just like, it's a letter from my friend, whatever, I don't care. It's like they're pouring their souls and everything on this because they want you to know how important you are in their lives and how much your character or you mean to them. It's beautiful.
Go ahead, Simon.
I was gonna say, listening to your passionate speech on how you're always trying to reach out to empower young women and older women is, and particularly with your background in social work, which by the way is really hard. My brother did social work, and let me tell you, the caseloads that they put on you is way past the ratio of what you're supposed to. So, kudos to you on that. In the future, once. And may not be for a long time because you look like you got more than more tank or gas in the tank and even then some before you hang up in-ring career. Is there anything that you'd like to do in the future that would really help, empower whether it's just women or just people in the community?
I mean, I'm always working with my community either by volunteering or doing different stuff just to stay, you know, giving back to the people that I live around. I worked a lot with the Salvation Army. We do like food bank stuff. We help the elderly. I work with the women. Definitely with Mission Pro Wrestling, one of the things that Brian like asked me that I should do for the next couple shows is when I have a group of the women coming, we go to the women's shelter and we either do an activity with them or, you know, we work with the kids, like something like that. And where we're still doing something different that not everybody's doing in the wrestling business. And another thing that I want to do with wrestling is help build more opportunities for us to work on production. I feel that there is a lack of women representation in production. In it, in the NWA, I saw it at Lucha Underground. I don't think there was any women in the back, actually, besides the PAs. Where else? And WOW, same thing. At AEW, there was only one or two, but there's very, very few. And I don't think it's either we don't know that we can ask, and so we can, you know, do an internship or anything, or we're not interested. But being in production is one of the most important parts for shows, because that's, at the end of the day, that's how we, you know, put the product and what people see on TV, what people see on YouTube. And that's one of the things that in the next year I would like to focus, is to, for those who are like just starting wrestling, to like learn how to like record a match. So when they see, they go to another show, an indie show, and they see how it looks, like you're like, no, this is not well recorded. This is like the angles that it should look. This is what, this is the story we're trying to say. This is how it should be recorded. And that for me has helped me to open my own business with custom matches. And even one of the guys that I work with is from Georgia. He's like, oh man, I saw how you record and you have such an artistic point of view. But it was because when I was a student, my husband and I, we were not forced, but we were volunteering before. So they gave us a camera and we were recording a lot of the matches. So I know what people want to see. Mm-hmm. And now I can see work and get the angles and stuff like that without being all shaky and everything. I think that's very, very important.
Now it's very interesting that you did say about, you know, seeing where women's wrestling is today, but also not just mentioning the in-ring performance, but people, the representation in the back. What would you say, just off the top of your head, are the biggest things that can be added to women's wrestling by having more of a female representation that you would immediately, we'd be able to see if we started having more women in the back?
Female bookers, man. Female bookers, female division. And we start from there. Like, every place that I've been has been a male booking female matches. And sometimes I'm like, this match makes no sense whatsoever. Yeah. Whatsoever.
Very good point.
And we have no say in a lot of things. And that's a little sad, because again, when we're running all female shows, you still, it's not dominant, like dominated by males, you know, at the end of the day.
Well, definitely talking about an all-female show. You had talked about a little bit earlier, Mission Pro Wrestling, Tournament of Hell, November the 6th. There's a lot. This card is stacked. I mean, you have yourself. They have Lacey Ryan. We have La Rosa Negra. We have Ali Gato. We got Jenny Sinicide. We got, you know, it's just, the card is huge. Can you tell us a little bit about that event show coming up?
So we're going to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It's 6 tournament matches. It's the quarterfinals and the semifinals. And then the finals are going to be on another show where we're going to crown our champion. But we're going to really, on this one, we want to make sure that some of the girls that have not been seen, they get an opportunity to showcase their skills, not only once, but twice. And we are extremely excited because, again, there's so much buzz on this second show. We had so many sponsors coming in, and we started, like, we have people like on the waiting list for December already.
Wow.
So,
congrats.
Yeah. It's really amazing to see the support that we're getting. And like I said, this is just the beginning of it. We have the girls are coming from Colorado. A lot of the girls are coming from Florida, our Texas ladies, and New Jersey. And again, we're just like super excited to have them in our show, because that last show, they all performed really well. They all had a great time. And this time we're going to do the same. And this one, again, we're going to focus on trying to teach them as much as possible how to like work the cameras, how to like engage the fans, how to engage those who are watching online, so we can make it even better and stronger. So by the next time when we have our next show in December, which is going to be a huge show, people are going to be even more excited to watch the show. So, again, the whole team is really excited to do what we're doing. Our sponsors are just beyond happy to be part of it. We have so many sponsors that are podcasters. So a lot of the times these girls are able to like promote themselves in a way that they've never done before. And this is a great opportunity for them to learn how to do an interview, how to feel comfortable in front of a camera, how to play their character without it, they even knowing they're doing it. And I don't think other promotions are doing what we're doing. And yes, it might look, it's a lot of work, but it's training, man. Cause I can tell you now, after I came out in AEW, I've had probably 100 requests for podcasts in the last 3 weeks. And I'm just very selective right now because of time crunch and because I'm trying to show, I'm trying to run my costumes, trying to have other big projects, my personal stuff, you know. So it's rough. And I tell the ladies, this is an opportunity for you to promote you first and then promote Mission Pro and what you're going to be doing there. Because we're having all these fans, and the fans, believe me, a lot of the girls were telling us, this is the most I've sold in merchandise ever. Wow. And we were doing that every time they show to our shows. Because, again, our fans here in Texas and many fans that came from out of the state, they were so excited to be there, and they were so excited to, like, promote and support a lot of them.
You know, go ahead, Simon.
No. I was just going to say thank you for doing that. I mean, you know, I've mentioned before, I mean, I have a 16-year-old daughter, and, you know, I've had an opportunity to talk to other, you know, younger girls who are into women's wrestling. I love women's wrestling, so it's exciting to hear this coming through, and the fact that you have another show in December that's coming up is even going to be bigger. Much kudos to you, and thank you so much.
No, I want to say again, thank you for everybody who's believing in what we're doing, and we're still like in the early stages of revamping and rebuilding. There's a lot of stuff that next year we're going to be implementing, but it's going to take us time. Like, again, I mentioned this when we first announced how are we going to run the show. We want to be self-run. We want to make sure that we have our own ring, that we have our own equipment, that a lot of the stuff that we're doing is because it's we're teaching, very teaching-based. A promotion more than, yeah, we want to sell DVDs and we want to make all this money. Yes, we want to do that. But at the same time, we want to teach a lot of the new girls and a lot of the girls that have not been able to be showcased in other places because X, Y, and Z. But we want them to be ready to have a great performance, even if they go to AEW or they go to NWA or they go to Ring of Honor. They know how to use the cameras and know how to play with the cameras. That is so important. And how to give an interview without choking, without like doing a lot of this stuff. And this is just practice. And I cannot stress this enough. And I hated it. My husband forced me to do it for so long. Podcast. He forced me. Like, I was like, man, I don't want to do it. Like, I got to go. But you have to do it. You have to promote yourself. Nobody's going to be giving you this podcast for you to do it. You have to do it. And we did. Jesus Christ, I don't even remember. We've been doing podcasts for a long, long time. I remember the first one. I think it was my friend in New Jersey, Damage 60. He's like one of the few ones that I did. And then from there on, we started doing more and more and more. And it just becomes like second nature. And believe me, these are skills that you have to learn within time. And then once you get the big one, it's easy. They put the camera on and you're like, yes, you know, let me tell you about my story, blah, blah, blah. When I had the one for it, it was so easy. I was just like talking to you guys, exactly like that. Yeah. Just prettier, of course. But even the guys that were like recording it, they were like, this is the easiest interview we ever had. You're so good at it. But it took me years of podcasts, took me years of doing interviews for me to like be able to say, yeah, this is a piece of cake. What else do you want me to do? You want me to cut a promo? I got you. What do you want me to say? Okay, let me be on my words. But it's practice. That's it.
Well, I think, and also what's really interesting with that is if you think about those steps, as we've kind of looked at just from the beginning, you had to learn English. That was like, you know, assimilating to this country. And that was not even in the sense of wrestling. That's just personally to achieve what you want to achieve. Yes. Then you look at training in the ring, and that's another thing. You got to learn, you know, there's so much to learn about storytelling and also to be athletic enough to be able to tell a story. And then we get to character. You know, it's like there's so much, and it's amazing that not only have you gone through all of that, but now you're taking which is some of the hardest stuff, and you're teaching the women to learn how to produce themselves, produce the product, and do essentially whatever it is they're asked to do. They'll be comfortable. It's amazing, and that's spectacular to see that happening. Do you think that, I know that like OVW has got the school accredited, and they're doing some of that same, you know, teaching the other skills to go along with in-ring skills. Do you think you see yourself and you guys maybe developing into that sort of teaching in the future?
To absolutely. That? Yes. Oh, yeah.
That's yes. Awesome.
It's like we have some stuff on the works, and when we get everything set and ready to go, we're going to make a big announcement. But yes, like we definitely is something that we want to do. We want to focus, especially we want to focus on women.
Yeah.
Women. Again, we're like the most underrepresented group of everything in the wrestling business. So again, we using Mission Pro Wrestling and using other partners that we have, we really want to focus on that. But we also want to help our local talent, men, you know, anybody, to really take advantage of social media and really learn the skills that are necessary to become somebody self-made. Because you don't need, now this day and age, you don't need a humongous company to be able to get your name out there.
Well, speaking of humongous companies, with AEW, and, you know, I'm sure that within the last, you know, well, let's say through this 2020, as crazy and weird as everything has been, I'm sure you've gotten a lot of opportunities kind of put out your way of, you know, you're getting that traction of maybe making some really boku money that you could then turn around and invest into Mission Pro Wrestling. What has it been like stepping into an environment of AEW where you have a lot of older knowledge there? You have so many people you could turn to backstage, and, you know, and then you have a lot of people like Chris Daniels, who, those of us who trained in, you know, SoCal, Chris almost has a connection to every single person.
Yes. Sorry, my dog is sick. Come on, dog.
Wait. Oh, no.
Yeah. He like, once I hear him, like, doing this, like, yeah, he needs to go to the bathroom. It was really interesting because just receiving feedback from some of the old timers, it was pretty awesome. Like, I can't really tell you how you're just like, oh, you're giving me feedback? Oh, okay, cool. You know, it was very humbling. So I really do enjoy it. And, being in the ring with Dustin Rhodes and you know, meeting Arneson, Taz, Jim Ross, and just listen to some of their stories. And sitting there, he's just like, Tully was there. He's always been really, Tully, volunteer. Tony Schiavone, my Tony, has my Tony. I love Tony Schiavone. He loves me back, I know. It's really cool. Like, being with Chris Jericho, I haven't hung out with Chris Jericho that much in a long time. I met him in Japan, and he's like, "Hey, girl, how you doing?" Like he remembers me. He's like, "I've seen you killing it," so I know people are watching. And just getting that feedback is just a reassurance of like, that what I'm doing is right, and I just have to keep doing what I'm doing to the next level to become better, without being too cocky or too full of yourself. Because once you hit that, there's no turn back. You think your shit don't stink, and that's not the case. There's still a lot of things that I need to work on, and I talked to my peers, and I was like, "Hey, make sure you watch my match. I'm working on this specifically. If I'm not, please, you know, highlight it to me and tell me like a specific example. So when I have my next match, I do better. I'm always that way, and I will be that way for the rest of my career." Because otherwise I'm not going to grow as a performer.
That's some of the best advice that a single person who is in your position can give to anyone. The growth is imperative. Let me ask you, kind of hit on the makeup before. First part of the question is, how much of an influence has the Day of the Dead been to you in terms of cultivating the look? And number two, a kind of follow-up on that is, how does your personality change when you finish that last stroke of makeup and now you see yourself in the mirror is that a lift to you? It's go time.
You know what? It's not go time until I'm like behind the curtain.
Okay.
Like maybe like 5 minutes in my match, because I usually pray every time, and then I just have to like remind myself that I'm the baddest perra in the world. No matter what, I'm still the baddest. Because when I go with another mentality, it's just like shit don't go the way that it's supposed to. But that's when Trevor Murdoch always reminds me that you're the little monster. Remind everybody why you're a 5'3" little monster and nobody fucks with you. Just go down the ring. Okay, sir. So, yeah, that's when I'm like, I completely transform. And if I have my headphones, I'll just play some like metal. And I'm like, I just get crazy because I had to like get into it. Or just think about my fight. Just think about that. And I was just like, all right, I don't want to get embarrassed. So let's go. It's go time. The influence with the face paint with Day of the Dead, of course, it's there. It's completely, that's the whole point of it. That's cultural. That's part of my personal history. And every time I step in the ring, playing homage to kids that I work with before that passed away. They either committed suicide due to drugs. They got killed by the police. Family members that were super supportive that not here with me anymore, but they were there watching my matches, sending me nice messages, opening their doors when, you know, we're homeless, like stuff like that. It always comes back to it. And I know when I'm in the ring, I know they're protecting me always.
You know,
go
ahead, Simon. No, please.
No. I was actually going to, you kind of mentioned it earlier and I was going to ask, but you know, I saw you pet Drago. How is Drago doing? You said he was a little sick. Is he feeling a little bit better? What's going on?
He's a little being a little dick. He's fine. He ate. So there was like a pound of meat. Just somebody dropped it in one of the apartments. And he is a stray, so he eats everything that is out there for him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
And don't like to take things out of his mouth because he gets very aggressive. Mm-hmm. So I'm, like, tugging with him, like, leave that alone, leave that alone. And he ate half a pound of that meat. So he felt great during the whole day. He was just like, whatever. Then my husband and I went to dinner, and we left for probably 2 hours. When I came in, he was in the room. And I was like, oh, man, smells like shit. So he had a little accident. He never, ever has accidents in the house, ever. Mm-hmm. He's very, very, even when we got him out of the pound, he never pooped unless he had like stomach problems. So the whole night, I went to sleep around 11. He woke me up at 1, at 2, at 4, at 5, at 6, 7. Yeah, because his tummy was hurting. But he's doing a little bit better. I mean, he's hydrated and he's not whiny. I mean, he's just... Like, he looks tired and without energy, but hopefully he gets better. If not, I'm going to have to take him to the vet.
Oh, we're going to send some positive energy. He gets a very quick recovery back to his regular self.
You hear that, Drago? Stop being an ass. Yeah, he's fine.
Does he run his own IG page or is someone else behind you?
The three of us. I had to put... that I'm like doing little tricks with him. I actually got a trainer and we are doing like just Zoom trainings, and we did one. I have to do the other one. And he's learning. I thought he wasn't going to learn. I was like, no, man, this dog is like, he ain't going to learn nothing. No, he's learning how to do the touch, how to do like the paw, which I never thought he will. Uh-huh. So I'm sure that if we're consistent and we train him, he'll be a better dog. We want to take him to places, but he has like terrible anxiety. Mm-hmm. So,
you know, speaking of anxiety, what was it for you to get an opportunity to finally settle into NWA and meet a guy like Billy Corgan? How has Billy been towards you? And is he I don't want to say hands-on because obviously he isn't a wrestler, but is he someone who will give you some, you know, positive encouragement or, you know, words of encouragement here and there?
Yeah, he is. When I had certain matches, I always call him to make sure that if there's something in specific that he wants to see on the story, that happened. And usually he gives me reign of, you know, creative control on my own stories. But yeah, when we were doing Power, he was very hands-on. He will be watching all the shows and taking notes. And when we were done, like, he will be like, well, this is what I saw. This was supposed to happen. And it was very, very like that.
And how has it been now with United Wrestling Network starting up? Has that been something that has kind of, you know, reinvigorated? Because it looked there for a second like, oh, shit, it's kind of gone away. And now everything's like back on like a newer scale and you know, having your own place there in Long Beach, having the opportunity to get to potentially compete with people from around the country and around the world. Is this something that is, you know, just you're excited to see happening to build that brand?
I mean, it's everything is up in the air. I honestly don't know what the plans are. I had fun in my match with Priscilla Kelly. It was a lot of fun and it was great. And I know it, for some of my peers, it's been really nice to get back on the ring. So hopefully everything goes well and this is something bigger and you know, Power comes back as soon as possible and we start going back to where we left off.
Yeah. And in the pandemic when it started and during that whole time that everyone was kind of on a lockdown, what did you do to A, keep your spirits up and B, keep yourself mind and body in the state it needed to be to get back into a ring as soon as you got the call?
I like literally was a maniac. I was working out like 5 hours a day.
Oh, wow.
I'll wake up. I'll do like jiu-jitsu exercises. I talked to one of the guys that were a local boxer. He came and like helped me do boxing. I was training a lot, like a lot. And then worked on projects that otherwise I would never work because I was so busy. We started with my website. What else did we launch? We launched my custom matches for Mission Pro Wrestling Customs. I always thought about doing it and I was like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And we did it. We relaunched Mission Pro Wrestling. So there's like a lot of stuff that happened during that. Oh, my YouTube page, which I have not worked on it because I got busy again. But it's like all the other stuff that I said, I'm going to do it. I just did it. Yeah. It was like, no.
Now, am I correct in saying that you've also become an American citizen?
No, that was last year. That was February last year.
But you are now American citizen. Yeah,
I'm a dual citizen. I'm Mexican American.
Awesome.
Right. And for you, what was that process like? Did it take a while? I'm not very familiar. I've known people who have done it, but they've really never gone into the bones of like, is it a tough process or did you feel it was
fairly easy? Longer than I should have been. I should have gotten my citizenship when Obama was in power because it was a lot easier. But I just waited and waited and waited. So it took me like 20 years to actually become a citizen. Then when I applied for the citizenship, it took like 2 years before they approved it. And then after they approved that, maybe it was like 6 months or less. And then I did my test and then I was an American citizen.
Is there anything that you learned in that process or even learning about history? As you said, you know, you kind of studied different histories in terms of Mexican Americans and the culture here. Is there something that you learned that absolutely shocked you that you might have not known?
The governor of my state. This, just kidding. not really. I mean, there's like the 100 questions that you should all Americans know. That's what you have to study.
You'd be surprised how many of us don't know them.
No, I guess it's just that, like, the importance of becoming an American citizen and the responsibilities that you now have and the rights you have that I think people kind of like put it on the side, especially when you're born here, like voting. Like, it's my voting is going to be my first time voting. So I'm very excited about that.
Awesome. But
that comes like you have to inform yourself about your local politics and what you're going to vote here. And you have to. And you have to do research. It's just not like, oh, I'm just gonna feel this and you don't even know. Like, that's very, you have to be responsible. That you have to do this very, very responsible, because not everybody has this right. What's the other thing? No, I just, you know, you can't have jobs that you couldn't have before. If you want to work in the government, you can work in the government now, or on other jobs that, you know, they ask you to have citizenship. But like I said, to me, it was such a special and important moment in my life, because I always been wanted to live in the United States. And now, you know, being an American citizen is just, it's just like another gift from life and another gift from wrestling, because wrestling paid for this. I'm really happy that I have now my American passport, and it's a lot easier to travel with your American passport than when I had my Mexican passport, actually.
Well, I have a question, and it's totally not related to what we've been talking about now, but I was looking at your Instagram, which I do follow you, and you got me freaking hungry, because whatever you're eating in San Antonio, Texas, I know you said you haven't eaten like that in a long time, but I was looking, I was like, damn, I'm freaking hungry.
Yeah, it's a place I found like maybe a month and a half ago or two. It's called Mimi and Dini Greek restaurant. It's on the outside of San Antonio. And I told my husband, he was like, oh, we haven't eaten Greek food. And I was like, oh, I got a place, but it's like 30 feet away. He was like, okay, whatever. And then we go there. It's like in the hood. It's like in this like hole in the wall. The food is good, man. We ate so much. And I was like, we still have space for dessert. So let's kill it. And we killed it. And it was so good. And I would like, literally we'll go right now just to get the fries. The fries are so delicious. Those fries were so good.
I mean, because when I was looking at it, I was like, man, what am I doing with my life? I need to go and get, and we have a Greek restaurant around the corner, but with COVID, it's not the same like it used to be. I got some takeout about a month ago. It wasn't the same. That was amazing.
No, like Texas, yeah, everybody can complain about us and criticize us. We've been open for a minute, and it's just been the blessing of just sitting in a restaurant and just enjoying. But I remember when they first opened up the restaurants, I sent a picture to my mom. I was eating a steak and I was like, I'm in a restaurant now. And they're like, oh, you went to a restaurant? Oh my God. And when I took them to the Grand Canyon, which was like a couple months ago, and we ate, they sat down in a restaurant. My mom almost cried, like literally. Wow. She's like, I can't be in California anymore. Like, we are not allowed to do anything. And it's just really sad.
So kind of speaking on food, what is, I'm not going to ask you what your favorite food is. I'm going to ask you, what is your food that's more on the side of a guilty pleasure that you normally know you shouldn't be eating, but you just love it so much, you just got to indulge every once in a while?
Oh, man. I go to this paleteria a lot, and I eat the corn on a cob, and my colleague, I'd always be like, you're so disgusting. Mayo with margarine or like butter and cheese in it. Like, and I'm like, I love it. I'm sorry. I'd be like, eat it. That, I can eat that all day, every day. And that's the stuff that I grew up with. And I go there like 3 times a week. And the ladies, yeah, they probably know my name now. And I'll be like, hey, I'm spending all my cash here. Sorry, ladies. There you go.
They probably already know what you need anyways. As soon as as you walk up, they have it ready.
Yes, pretty much. Either that or raspado. Like, I'm always like drinking raspados, and those raspados have so much sugar. But I just like, oh man, I love them.
What, you know, besides the go-to food, what before the pandemic hit and, you know, you could go out, is there something that you and your husband like to do? Was there, you know, any places you'd like to go or Were you guys movie fans, or what was it like for you guys to do like a date night?
The movies, man. I missed the movie theaters so much for so long. They're open now. So we went last week and I don't regret it. I love it. We were there. I can't believe we were sitting in the movie theater. We go to the movie a week. There is one called Alamo Draft House. Yep. So I like super good food there. Man, Texas, they take it to the next level. Mm. So you sit there, they bring you your food. And I think we spent, when we used to go to that movie theater, we used to spend like $100 just on food.
Yeah.
Because we were like asking for food and drinks and stuff. And it was like, it was delicious. The movies were different than your regular movie theater. And yes, we used to miss the movies a lot.
Did you guys, have you guys spent any time, or do you spend any time going to the Riverwalk?
We haven't as much because like there's so many people there. I went to the Riverwalk a lot when everything was closed. I used to go running at the Riverwalk. It was beautiful. Beautiful. So I go running there like 3 times a week. Ooh. There was nobody there. I'll just run for miles and miles and miles.
So one of my favorite things in San Antonio is the Alamo. And one of my, like, I'm looking at the Alamo, you know, standing straight forward, looking at it. It's beautiful outside. You know, it's so old and historic, and it's just, you're just taking it all in. Then I just happen to kind of turn around and look. Oh. And I realized you have the Alamo, and then straight across from it, you have this like 5-star hotel. And it was such a culture shock, you know, to look and go. I mean, my first thought was, well, if the Mexican army was staying at that hotel, of course they'd beat these guys. It's something like the Alamo. Do you like going to various historical places when you, I know when you get a chance to travel, sometimes it's hard, but you know, you just mentioned the Grand Canyon. Are like landmarks and stuff like that something you like to do?
Oh yeah, all the time, especially if they're free.
Exactly, when you're free.
A lot of them are free, so I'll be like looking at them and be, oh, we should go here. And then when we're doing road trips, we do that. I mean, when I went to London and I stayed there for 3 weeks, I went to all the museums and just like looked at everything, and I'd be like nerding out because, you know, I'm a big history person, and I remember seeing a lot of the stuff on my history books, and I'll be like, oh, I saw that picture, it's here. Or these certain landmarks, and I would remember watching it on TV, or again like talking about it in our history books. And I really enjoy it. And even here, like there's a couple of missions that I never seen before, and my friend went there, and then I asked him, are they free? And he's like, yeah. So they're like in the south side of San Antonio. And then I just went there, I took Holidad, we went to 3 or 4 different ones, and it was really cool because I didn't get to see those kind of missions because I'm used to the ones in California. So we used to like hit mission when we come from LA, and when we had time, we'll like hit missions before we got to Oakland. So that was pretty cool too.
So I have another good question for you. What is something that you can tell us about either your personality, your lifestyle, that nobody knows, and they'd be shocked if they ever found out?
What? I don't know. There's not much to say.
Ask me something. I mean, are you someone that dances in the mirror, or you're somebody that sings?
Everybody, I sing. Okay. What else do I do, man?
You can call in a lifeline.
No, I'm calling a lifeline. I'm like, what is that I do? Train. I don't do nothing. I just like literally, I just train.
Okay. All right.
I love festivals. Like that's one of the things that I miss doing is going to festivals. Like I don't care what kind of festival it is. As long as there's food, I would like to go. If festivals were like the thing that we used to do a lot when we were in the Bay Area.
Okay. What was the last festival that you went to before, you know, this pandemic stuff happened?
Man, I was looking for, in San Antonio, it's a thing called Fiesta.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's like a week party, like every day. There's a party, there's something going on. So that was coming a week after they closed everything down here in Texas. And I was devastated. I was like, life is gone. life is over. Fiesta is over. I'm sad. It was really sad.
Now, is that a festival that happens annually, I'm assuming?
Every year, yes.
Okay.
Big, it's huge. I think it's Fiesta in like old Texas or just in San Antonio? It's just San Antonio.
Okay. Well, that's definitely going to be the first thing you do if this pandemic gets over in the next couple months. We've been saying that.
I think they were supposed to have Fiesta in November, so we're all kind of like, it's canceled? Whatever. We're not having
God dang.
We were all like, literally, everybody's like with their like coolers waiting for Fiesta to happen because you go to you go there and there's like all kinds of music.
Mm-hmm.
Tejano music, mariachi, norteño, cumbias, all kinds of music, reggaeton. It's super cool. Everybody's dancing. I'm telling you, they bring a little cooler. They get drunk. They bring the chairs. The moms and daddies and their kids are like dancing. Families. It's just like a family. It's really dope, man. It's the Latino community here in Texas is like very different than the Latino community in California. They call themselves Tejanos. So the fiesta is where it's at. As long as, like I said, as long as there's beer and food, everybody's happy here.
You know, so one of the things that I find most interesting is the fact that you have done MMA. And with that, it's a tough thing to do. And it's very admirable that you've ventured and tried it and put your foot in the water, per se. Is it something that you would want to do again, and how much of an impact did Del Rio have into your MMA?
So he's the one who invited me to be part of Combate Americas. This is my Combate Americas, where I went. That's why I have this poster. Yeah, you should do it. It's really fun, blah, blah, blah. You know, Sexy Star did it. She did really well, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, all right, let me try it. And then, because I'm crazy and I was bored and I want to try something different, we went ahead and did it. And I've been training MMA for a year now. With my schedule right now, I have not been able to do the training that I was prior to getting it called to do all these bookings. But my plan is to go back and to get a more set schedule. Continue to train. I want to do competitions. That's one thing I have on my book for this year that I was supposed to do, is do a jiu-jitsu competitions. And I mean, I'm still signed for Combate Americas for another year. So I'm definitely going to schedule a fight. It's just like it gets you into like a mentality where you are get so consistent and so dedicated and focused. And I really like that. I mean, it's hard when you're cutting weight and everything, but I like to see the results. I like to see the changes in my body, the changes in my mentality, the whole process of getting into the fight, you know, because you go through like so many emotions, like anxiety, like you're ready, then you feel like you're not ready. And it's just like, it's so crazy. But at the end, once the cage closes and you're throwing putazos and blood is coming out, you're like, yep.
Is that, The process of training for it, when you find out you have a certain opponent, you know who your opponent's going to be, how do you study for knowing what that opponent's offense is going to be like so that you know that, you know, this is how you have to approach fighting that person? Is that, do you study film? What goes into it?
You have to, because you have to know their style and you know, you need to know how they're going to attack. And how to counterattack. That's very, very important. On my first fight, that's, I think, one of the things that I lacked on doing, because I was so new and I didn't, my opponent was pretty good striker. And just knowing angles and working angles, I did not know what angles were. And because everything was new. Striking, jiu-jitsu, everything is new. And just trying to learn everything at the same time is so hard.
Yeah.
So now I had an opportunity to like focus on boxing, focus on jiu-jitsu, and definitely there's other stuff that you got focused on, like Muay Thai, because I don't know if the person does Muay Thai. and there's a different way that they fight. So it's a lot. It's a lot to take in.
When you look at the,
you need to go poo-poo? You guys can't. Go ahead. Shoot your question.
When you look at training for MMA and training for pro wrestling, what is the obviously in the fighting, you know, is different in itself, but what is the main things? Do you have to have a little more cardio for wrestling, or do you have to have that same amount of cardio for fighting? What's the difference in training preparation? No.
We train like, if you want to, like, if you're doing pro, it's like you're training 6 to 7 hours a day. That includes conditioning. That includes your jiu-jitsu, your striking, stretching, like all kinds of stuff. So it's compound training. So it's a lot. Like I was surprised on how much dedication you have to have and the time that you have to have in order to do it, because it's not easy at all. And you have to have a certain type of cardio that I don't ever thought I was going to train like that in my life. And because you have to be ready to have 3 rounds of 5 minutes, and you're talking about, you're going to be striking, you're going to be doing all, like, when you scramble, it's so tiring. Like, that's one of the most tiring things. And then you get up and you still have to throw putazos, and you still have to be able to breathe. And it's a lot of technique on many different levels. And I'm still learning. I'm very, very young in the biz.
Yeah. And in terms of translating that, we're seeing a lot of, Bloodsport, Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, FSW out here, did the Natural Born Killers, mixing kind of that martial arts MMA style with pro wrestling. And in your actual in-ring style too, you see a lot of that type of grappling. Do you think that this is something that not only are you looking forward to continuing MMA, but can really translate it into not only your own wrestling, but also in preparing some of those, you know, young women who might start coming to you guys to learn and train?
Well, absolutely. The jiu-jitsu and MMA changed my game completely, man. Like, it made me be more fearless, and be more aggressive, and make everything look tighter and real. I mean, I cannot explain, and I cannot tell you how much I hate when I watch matches and people are slapping their legs over and over. I mean, everybody works different, but I personally don't like it. And I always tell the girls, like, that's what's going to make you look different, when you make things look tight and real, especially being 5'4", 5'3", and being smaller than everybody.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, shit, I don't want to get hurt. That's what I heard so many times with me. So I will continue to do martial arts until I'm like 60 years old. I want to be a black belt at one point in my life on jiu-jitsu. And I know I can achieve that, but it just takes time, and you got to earn all your stripes. And that's what I like about martial arts. You got to earn everything you have.
Makes sense. The only other question I wanted to ask, since you're outside, are we able to get a shot of Drago? Probably not right now. He might be pooping.
Yeah, I can show you. He's taking a dump. He has that face that, like, you know when your stomach hurts and you're in the bathroom?
And yeah, he has. Oh, man.
Poor Drago.
Well, hey, you eat the meat on the street, sometimes you're going to have it come out the other end. So wish him the best of luck. Oh, Jesus. There he is. I'll be happy. So beautiful. Beautiful dog.
So kind. We call him a crackhead.
Well, I tell you what, your cardio is flawless, because I know he's walking you, and you're not breathing hard at all. So, I mean.
I'm just patient with this poor dog, man. There's been so many so many issues with this dog because he was a reject. He was like, I think he was in the pound for probably a year until we pick him up.
Wow.
Wow. DJ Impact, you got any questions before we wrap?
No, I'm sitting here as a fan, just enjoying the the interview. So I'm good. I just want to thank Thunder Rosa for coming to hang with us this afternoon, and definitely appreciate it. Enjoying your work on television, I tell you. When I see you, I know I'm about to get some really good wrestling action, and just continue to do that. I appreciate it.
That's what it's all about, and that's what I'm here for, man.
Absolutely. Final question before we wrap up. If the pandemic gets out of control and all of a sudden zombies are rising from the graves, if you had to pick two people to be on a zombie hunting team with, who would be the two people? Anyone that you can think of?
John Wick can kill anybody with a fucking pen.
Yes.
And oh, pick. There has to be a woman, a badass woman. Who's a badass? Yeah, they're gonna be like a superwoman, no, Wonder Woman.
Wonder Woman, yeah. Yeah, I think that probably will get you guys pretty far. You know, before we go, what are your social media handles so people can follow your work and just keep up to pace with what you're doing?
You can find me on ThunderRosa22 at all my handles, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And if you want to buy my merchandise, that I would highly recommend you. Yo, don't bark at the neighbor. You can watch me on, you can find me on ThunderRosa.net. Hey, neighbor. He loves you.
I love it. He loves you.
Yeah, bro, that's why he does that. Yeah, he hates my neighbors. Bro, why can't you be normal like every other dog? Yeah. So that's it. That's where you guys can find me. And you can find me on YouTube too. Everything else on my page anyways, ThunderRosa.net.
Perfect. Awesome. Thunder Rosa, thank you very much. Continued success here coming up. Please, everyone, check out her website. Please support her by buying merchandise. It's very important in this time. Also, do not miss the upcoming what is it officially called?
Called the Mission Pro Wrestling, and you guys can watch it on TitleMatchNetwork.com. You can subscribe there and watch the show. And also, if you want to, you know, Christmas is coming, and you know that I love shoes. 9624 San Antonio, Texas, 78229. I'm size 10. I'm Bigfoot.
All right, there you have it. You better make room in that closet. You're going to have a lot of people sending you shoes.
Hey, I don't care. I'll throw all the old ones away.
What's your favorite brand of shoe?
My favorite brand of shoe. I like Under Armour for tennis shoes, and for women's shoes, like, man, I hardly ever wear any like nice like high heels or whatever. I like cowboy boots a lot. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Everyone, Thunder Rosa, thank you very much. Please remember, anyone listening, watching, please subscribe, download, share, review, all that good stuff for everything the Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting do. And everyone, give a shout out to Drago, who's been a great...
Drago! Oh, Drago.
He looks so much more happier. He must, whatever he had, he shit out. He's good.
Believe me, he still has like 30 pounds.
Until next time, everybody.
All right, take care.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.